What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Ghoulish Davis. I am joined by my co-host, Sean Oded O'Connell. I am horrible coming up with Halloween-related names. That's why I didn't change my Twitter.
Oh, I hated people who changed their Twitter.
Everybody did this year. Everybody changed it to, like, you know, Dave Ghoulish Goes. And you're scrolling. You have no idea who anybody is.
No.
Because
I blocked everybody who did that.
Everybody that had this Halloween. Because we were Halloween Grinches.
Blocked. Yes.
That's what I said the other day. I said, I can't wait till Halloween's over. I'm a Grinch because I don't want to stare at all your cutesy Halloween Twitter avatars.
I'm much more of a Labor Day guy.
Spooky Sue. But yes, Halloween is this week, it is a fun holiday for everyone, I think. Is it fun for you? What are you dressing as? Like, what is your family? Are you going, like, do you have, like, a family theme? Is it just your kids that are dressing up?
This is the first year that my oldest kid, who's 9, he'll be 10, he wants to finally go as, like, Jason. And he has no idea who Jason is, but he bought the hockey mask and, like, a giant machete with blood sort of dripping off of it.
He went to the store.
He did. He actually used his money to get this. And because the thing is, like, my kids have a bunch of costumes that they can use. And that's the – like, my youngest has, like, 5 different things that he could choose. He could be Iron Man. He could be Batman. I think he's leaning toward Darth Vader. And he has these costumes. Either they're his brother's or they're just things that he puts on and wears around the house. But I'm fascinated to see what my oldest does. Like, he wants to use a chainsaw, but we have, like, an orange – sort of, you know, Fisher Price one that is not scary. And then, of course, there's the machete that came with the Jason mask. And so I love the fact that he wants to do this because whenever someone asks him, who are you? He doesn't know enough to say Jason, but he's like, I'm going to be the hockey mask guy with the machete and the blood on his shirt. And then
the Fisher Price chainsaw.
And the Fisher Price
chainsaw. I'm a badass.
Exactly. So I'll see how that turns out. I'll take plenty of pictures and post them on Twitter. But I'm not dressing up. In years past, I have gone as movie-related things. Have you ever dressed up as a movie-related person?
Have I? I haven't dressed up in a long time. I guess I'm a kind of a Halloween dud.
Well, for parties. If you ever go to a party, you kind of have to.
Yeah, if you go to parties, but I don't have any friends. Nobody's really inviting me to any parties. So I think the last time I really dressed up, I went and walked through the New York City Halloween Parade, which is a really cool experience if you've never done it before. I went as Krusty the Clown.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, it was great, and all the kids are yelling "Krusty, Krusty," and you kind of you feel like a celebrity for a day. Cops were stopping me, wanting to take their picture with Krusty, and so that was a really cool, memorable moment for me. But yeah, other than that, you know, it's just about, you know, when you have kids, it's like taking your kids around and, you know, letting them experience the trick or treating and just driving your car in certain parts, because at night the kids that with the egging, like my car got egged one year, and I don't know if anything you've ever had has ever been egged, getting that stuff off is a pain in the ass.
That's a very New York thing, because we did that growing up with shaving cream and eggs. Like, that's not a problem down here for whatever reason, which is fine because I don't want to be cleaning egg off of my car. Hey, drink.
I know, drink. Everybody drink every time one of our phones ring in the background.
Now,
if you're not used to the drinking game on this podcast, that is what it is. So take a drink. One of our phones rang in the background. But, you know, we live exciting lives. And and so the phones are constantly going off in the background. I imagine this latest call was something coming into the bat line. I'm sure it's breaking news. Or maybe something related to X-Men First Class, which is going to be our first big topic, big news this week. X-Men First Class. See, I did it again, Sean.
You did. Well,
I called it X-Men First Class 7 times before we started recording this podcast. And then my last time I was like, no, X-Men Days of Future Past. And then here I go again, X-Men First Class. It's just, it rolls off the tongue.
Because it feels like a first-class sequel, too.
It does.
I think it's way more connected to that universe than it is to Bryan Singer's existing, you know, first two X-Men movies.
Yeah, but X-Men Days of Future Past, released its first trailer this week, which is a lot like the Comic-Con trailer that they showed in July. A lot of people were kind of bummed about that, or at least the people that were at Comic-Con and were like, what's this? We're getting gypped. You guys couldn't give us anything more. A couple of shots were different. There was a couple of things in there that I don't remember seeing at Comic-Con. But, you know, and Bryan Singer said this is going to be primarily a character-driven trailer, for the first trailer, because he don't have a lot of special effects done yet. It's got nothing, he said.
Well, because we haven't seen Sentinels. That's the selling point for me for this movie. It's not just the marriage of the two ensembles. I want to see the giant Sentinels, the mutant-hunting robots that are, you know, one of the most popular X-Men villains that have been promised on screen ever since they started doing X-Men movies. And you saw the head of one of them in Brett Ratner's Last Stand. But I think we're finally going to get to see, like, X-Men versus Sentinels on screen, which is fine. I think what happened with the conversation of the Days of Future Past trailer, once it screened, was it was just a montage of like headshots, and it was. And I think what it has to do, I think the purpose of this trailer is to let people know, let the people who don't follow, you know, movie sites on an hour by hour basis, or maybe didn't read this storyline growing up, the fact that it's going to use the existing old X-Men characters and it's going to combine them with the first class cast. And I think that's a really important point to get across. And there's probably hundreds of thousands of people who A, didn't know an X-Men movie was coming, and B, don't know that that's the concept of this one. So I think that the trailer really got that point across, and save the effects stuff for later when we get closer of the release date.
Exactly. I think that's what a lot of it is. You know, this movie comes out at the end of May, and I don't understand fans, because they'll release the first trailer and they're like, I want Sentinels, I want this, I want that. But then you give them that and they're like, you're showing me too much of this movie in the trailer. What are you doing? You cannot please everyone. It's impossible. But yeah, I do like that. I like how this first trailer sort of sets up, look, this is what's happening. All these characters that we first established in the year 2000. So the first X-Men came out, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think
and the first X-Men movie really sort of helped relaunch superhero movies in that era. I think they've evolved a lot since then, and I think one major thing we're going to be looking at in this film is how has Bryan Singer evolved? Has he evolved with the way superhero movies? Because you look at that first X-Men trilogy I think it's similar to Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy. You look at all six of those films, superhero movies are a lot different now. Iron Man changed things. The Dark Knight changed things.
Right.
So has Bryan Singer evolved? A lot of people – and another interesting thing, another thing that people were criticizing this trailer for was being too dark, which is interesting because after The Dark Knight, that's all everybody wanted. Everybody wanted the grittier super movie, the darker superhero movie. And then Marvel, you know, it's like everybody's watching Marvel. You know, the Avengers, I think, changed, sort of evolved their tone a lot. And now you're getting these Marvel movies that are fun and funny and also exciting. And now everybody's on that bandwagon. They're like, where's the fun superhero movie?
But I said this on Twitter, too, and the X-Men books were never fun. Like, they were always oppressed characters. You know, they're mutants who are on the outside of society, and they're not being accepted by humankind. They're not the wisecracking Spider-Man characters. No. They're not – you know, they're more in tone with Batman, and they should be more serious. And I'm not to say that there's not going to be some levity, but that's why, you know, whenever Hugh Jackman broke off a one-liner as Wolverine, it lightened the mood because they're supposed to be a little more somber, and that's in character with what the X-Men are.
Do you think – I mean, where do you see something changing in the way in fan expectation for superhero movies? Do you think now people want to see lighter, funnier superhero movies? I mean, have audiences changed that drastically in terms of their expectations? I mean, The Dark Knight only came out a few years ago. Do people now want lighter, funnier superhero movies?
I think that it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, I think that Edgar Wright's Ant-Man can be fun and should be fun because he's that kind of director and it's a lighter character. but I don't want a slapsticky Days of Future Past. No, not at all. I don't want you to be forcing, you know, jokes into a scenario like that. But if at the same time, if I saw Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Peter Parker's this morose, you know, sullen goth kid, yeah, I'd be really disappointed because the sarcasm of Peter Parker is what I love about that character. So, I mean, it's the tone. It's what's expected, I guess, of these different characters. Do I think that Days of Future Past should be exciting? Yeah, I think you can be totally exciting and be a roller coaster ride and not hammering your audience with, you know, quote unquote, important themes over and over again like Nolan's trilogy seemed to do. But it's going to be up to Singer to sort of find that balance. And you're right. I would probably feel a little bit better about Days of Future Past if Matthew Vaughn, who directed First Class, was still on board with it, because I thought that he figured out how to tell the story with these characters and still deliver, you know, really good tentpole action sequences. I mean, the Bay of Pigs standoff was one of the most memorable X-Men sequences we've seen on screen. Great sequence. And, you know, yeah. And he got into the, you know, what makes these characters tick, the push and pull between Magneto not wanting to trust humans and Charles still wanting to stand up and believe that they can coexist. And it's a very important, you know, foundation for the X-Men stories about whether humans and mutants can live together. And I think that's going to be a driving factor of Days of Future Past. And the fact that they're going to launch this Sentinel program to eliminate mutants because humans have essentially believed that once we know they exist, they don't want to coexist in a world where the mutants are around. And so he's going to have to figure out how to tell that story and yet still make it into – I don't know how he can deliver less than a three-hour X-Men.
Jesus, I'm sorry. My drink, by the way. If you're playing this game at home, drink again. My phone went off again. But yeah, you know, what's interesting about this is that this film also feels like this sort of franchise finale, but it's not. I mean, it may be a finale for Bryan Singer, the sort of his this is the way I'm going out now in terms of X-Men, and now I'm going to pass the baton. But I mean, this is a franchise Fox needs to keep going. They got to keep making X-Men movies.
Well, and they want to do X-Force 2, which is another spinoff, and they can bring Cable into that. There's another character. You know, but that's an interesting thing because they're tying Days of Future Past around Wolverine, and how many more Wolverine films does Hugh Jackman have in him, you know?
That's what I think, and this people are saying that this may be his last movie in the X-Men universe, and yeah, I think they're going to have to start transitioning and making different moves, and you know, the Fantastic Four is on the horizon, and maybe those characters can kind of merge with X-Men, but we're going to keep an eye on this franchise, because I think it's an interesting one to kind of see where they go with this, and well, X-Men Days of Future Past looks good. I'm a fan. I think it looks good. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Did you think this was a good first step for them in terms of introducing mainstream America to the
I do. Project? I do. I like the trailer. I thought it was good. I really liked it at Comic-Con. You know, they reuse some music that's familiar to you that you've heard in other movies before. But you know what? It is what it is. It works. It'll be interesting. I think some people have mixed feelings when it comes to X-Men. I think X-Men First Class really helped people sort of believe in the future of this franchise. And so now it'll be interesting to see that cast merge with the older cast and to see if Bryan Singer – is Bryan Singer a blockbuster director? Is this guy going to – you know, this is the movie. If he knocks us out of the park, welcome back Bryan Singer. If he doesn't, then I could see him reverting back to more stuff like The Usual Suspects and Valkyrie. And we'll see. But I'm curious to see. There's a lot on the line from Bryan Singer here too. So we'll see what happens. But moving on, there's a lot of movies coming out in the theaters this weekend.
There are. Yes, for all ages too.
For all ages. And I really want to start with a movie. And I'll be honest with you, Sean, I know this is a big thing that I'm throwing out now. I think it's one of the best YA adaptations that we've seen. And I know, you know, Harry Potter, Potter.
Oh, wow.
But you know what?
It's a bold statement.
It's a bold statement, but Ender's Game, you know, and a lot of people are like coming at me on Twitter like, what, really, this is good? I think the buzz on Ender's Game is just awful. And a lot of it may have been due to the Orson Scott Card, you know, controversy or whatever it is. But you know, this is a movie worth seeing.
And you say the buzz is bad. I almost just say it's non-existent. It almost feels like so many people are looking ahead to Thor and the Hunger Games, and people sort of forget that this exists. And so I went into it you know, with this sort of not standoffish, but like, hey, convince me that this is a story that needs to be told. And I'm with you, man. I was totally convinced. I didn't love it, but there was so many things in it that I did like.
Yeah.
And I don't know the story. I'm not up to date with the book. I didn't read it. So I don't know what was chopped, you know, to film it, to get it to be filmable. All you hear that it was like an unfilmable story, that there's so much ground that has to be covered. And I'm sure that they truncated it to fit the movie, but, visually, it looks fantastic. I mean, here we talk about the science fiction genre and how Gravity raised the bar. And not that Ender's Game, you know, surpasses that, but it comes really close to living up to it. There are these great training sequences that the young kids who are recruited for this future army have to go through, and they're testing themselves in zero gravity, and they're engaging in these battles, these laser tag battles to figure out how to get behind an enemy. And all of that stuff was really, really thrilling. I could totally see young kids getting into that storyline and following Ender's training as he becomes this warrior. So I thought there were a lot of really good things to praise in the film.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I liked about it, and I think I said this on Twitter right after I said it, but it's refreshingly brainy for a big effects-driven movie about kid soldiers. Mm-hmm. You know, we get all of these big blockbusters where it's just about the fight sequences and swords and guns and lasers and, you know, and people fighting and kicking and cool kicks. And, you know, a lot of it is just how cool can you make this fight look like, whereas this film is about the strategy. And I made a joke, I think, to someone saying that Ender's Game feels like a film that you should show to graduating classes from, like, middle school on, because it really does help kids. It's got a lot of great leadership themes, a lot of great themes about knowing your opponent, a lot of cool little strategy exercises that kids can apply to their own lives, and even though it is set in a sort of a futuristic setting, but... I really like that about it. You don't get that in these big effects-driven movies. You don't get sort of that brainy stuff that, you know, instead of coming out and punching and swinging, we're going to kind of take a different approach, you know, and this is why we're going to take that approach. And it just kind of helps you think a little bit more.
Yeah, it's closer to Patton than it is to Star Wars. You know,
it's
all about like military maneuverings. And so for that reason, I almost wonder, and this was my concern about it, is it a little bit too smart for its target audience? You know, are people going into it just looking for, you know, not Tron level special effects, but like cutting edge special effects that drive the story forward? There's a lot more to discuss here in Ender's Game. And, I don't want to get into third act spoilers. But it really does deal with some heavy, you know, topics later on about why we engage in battles and what feelings do people wrestle with after they've been in legitimate combat? Because Ender goes through a lot of digital simulations, and then when he's finally forced to go into battle, how does it affect him differently? Because here he is. He's the cream of the crop, and that is a great – I'm so glad you brought it up, because this is a movie that celebrates being the best and the brightest and doesn't come with that nerd connotation, the negative connotation that comes with being smart. You know, all these kids are celebrated for being intelligent and being able to –
drink.
As you say,
drink.
Rise up to be leaders.
I don't know what's going on this morning at my house. It's crazy. But drink. I'm wasted right now.
So I just worry about, because I've got a 9-year-old, he's going to be 10. For a while, I wondered if he could come to this. I'm leaning a little bit away from it, too, because of that third act, because things do get kind of serious. And they should. It's the way the story is driving itself, and I'd be disappointed if it shortchanged the audience on that. But I do think that, you know, if you think that this is because it's got a young cast and it's, you know, is being sold as young kids training to fight these alien races, that can be played some way and be accessible for younger audiences. I think Ender's very proudly goes towards teenagers and kids who are mature enough to wrestle with some of the questions that it asks.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it does definitely has that some clunkiness in it, because it is this giant novel that's being scrunched into a 2-hour movie. I almost wish it went longer. I think as they transition from one sort of big moment in the film to another big moment, it gets a little bit clunky, and you feel it. You feel them kind of – you can almost feel them squishing the book down as you're watching this film. And because of that, it gets a little bit clunky in terms of in characters. But overall, you know, I liked it, and I thought it was really good, and I think it's got a lot of great messages for kids in it. And so, and it's interesting because we will say, you know, yeah, it's one of the best YA adaptations that we've seen in this, I guess we can call it the Harry Potter Twilight era. But it almost feels like a movie that a lot of people are going to praise, a lot of people are going to go see, but it's not going to get a sequel. It's not going to become a franchise.
And it should. If it ends, I really wanted to see where the story continues to go. But you know what? If something like Mortal Instruments, which tanked, you know,
or Percy Jackson too,
right? And maybe what they do is they just sort of scale back the budget and they realize that they have a target on it. You know, maybe we're both wrong, and maybe a lot of people will come out and support it, and then great, you know, because this is one of those films that I saw it on the IMAX, and it's IMAX but not 3D, which is fantastic, because then you can really appreciate the visuals. It looks really good on the big screen.
It does look great on the big screen, and Asia Butterfield, this we'll leave here, he's the star of it. He was also the star of Hugo with Martin Scorsese, and this is a kid I just love watching. I mean, talk about young kids, kind of up-and-coming actors. What this kid is doing right now, especially in Hugo and in this film, this is a kid I want to keep watching, and I hope this is a kid that in a couple of years from now really kind of transitions into an actor that becomes one of our best working, because he just what he gave in this performance, just the different sorts of emotions, and a lot of his struggle is internal in this film, and so it kind of reads on his face, and it was brilliant.
I totally agree with you, dude. After Hugo, I thought, like, I want to see more of what this kid is able to do. But the way he holds his own against Harrison Ford, Viola Davis, and then with Ben Kingsley again in this movie. And he is really the heart and soul of this movie. He does a great job of carrying it.
He is. So if you haven't been able to realize yet, Ender's Game, I think, is our big recommendation for this weekend. But there's other stuff coming out, and this is where I turn it over to you, Sean, for a Q&A, because I haven't seen these other films. We have Last Vegas, Free Birds.
Right.
About Time. Okay. Let's start with Free Birds, because here's an animated movie about that's Thanksgiving related, and we don't have a lot of Thanksgiving related movies. I feel like people take their dysfunctional family stories and save them for Christmas, but don't really. Everybody ignores Thanksgiving. They ignore it when it comes to their animated movies. They ignore it when it comes to the family movies. You know, if you ask anybody on the street, what's your favorite Thanksgiving-related movie? If they don't say Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, then you should knock them over the head with something. But really, that is the quintessential Thanksgiving movie. I mean, there is no other Thanksgiving movie. Here's Free Birds. It's an animated movie about turkeys, two turkeys that travel back in time to try to stop this tradition of them being served as the main dish on Thanksgiving. Sean, is it worth seeing?
I passed on it. I didn't see it. I know I was supposed to. I was assigned to. That was my homework. And you just had a great build. That was a great build-up, dude. You sold it really well.
That was an awesome build-up.
I didn't tell you before we started recording this that I didn't go see it. I didn't see About Time either. I saw Las Vegas, but I didn't see About Time. And I'm hearing – I want to focus on About Time just for a second, because I'm hearing from so many people – that it's something special, that it's really good, and that you're going to cry. It's one of these like
it's
romantic comedy ones. It's a crier, yes. So, dude, you should totally go see it.
yeah, I like you say that, like, because you're the guy that cries.
You like a good cry.
You like a good cry, Eric, so you should go see it.
We've said this. I'm hearing really good things about Time, and it's one of those films that I'm going to go out of my way this weekend to go see on my own, which I don't do often, because if I miss it at the media screening, I just sort of catch up with it later. But I love Rachel McAdams. I really like the idea of time travel in films, and I hear that this one uses time travel really well, and so I'm going to go out of my way and check that one out. But I did see Last Vegas.
Here we go. We have Morgan Freeman, Michael Douglas, Kevin Kline, and Robert De Niro. It would, like, if these guys got together and made a movie, and we were saying this about Stallone and Schwarzenegger, if this movie came out in 1988, it's like, oh my God, it's like the Avengers. it would be like the 1988 version of the Avengers for people who like these guys. But this is a foursome that it's like, yeah, you know, I want to see these guys. So I guess the big question is this a foursome that sells a movie? I mean, is it worth seeing?
It's worth seeing, and yes, it's because of the foursome. The movie doesn't do a whole heck of a lot beyond hey, we've got these four guys and let's turn them loose. And because they're all so good that anytime that they get their own, you know, their individual scenes or when they're playing off of each other together, there's so much chemistry. They're so natural at what they do. They're very fun. Kevin Klein walks away with the entire film, but Morgan Freeman's really entertaining. It makes really obvious jokes about getting older and old age. And, you know, this cracks me up. Almost all of our media screenings are at 7 or 7:30. The Las Vegas screening was set at 6 o'clock. Just because the whole audience was filled with seniors who you knew had to, like, get back to go to bed around 8. But they ate it up. It was just – it plays right to that audience. It is exactly what you think it is, but it has plenty of laughs in it, and the cast is entertaining. It's not The Hangover with seniors. It's not that raunchy. It's more like a Meet the Parents type level of humor, where it's very mainstream, very soft, but, you know, it lands a couple of really good laughs. Mary Steenburgen's in it, and she's just beautiful and charming as always. And these four guys, they can do a movie like this in their sleep, but at least they sort of rise up. And I would not be surprised if we have the next Las Vegas or something, because I think if this one connects with audiences, and I would not be surprised if this is the number one movie of the weekend, that the studio is going to just realize, let's do another one quick with these guys, because we don't need much story. We just need these four guys on camera.
It'll be interesting to see if these guys beat Ender's Game, which I don't see happening. But if they do, that'll be interesting. But yeah, you know, and we'll leave on this note. It's an interesting weekend, because we don't get many weekends where there's almost literally something for everyone.
Right.
Where you have your kids movie in Free Birds, you have your teen movie in Ender's Game, you have your date movie in About Time, you have your adult movie in Las Vegas. There really is something for everyone, so I say get out to the movies. Go see one of these movies. And if you're not going to see one of these movies, then see 12 Years a Slave. See All Is Lost. See Gravity. See Captain Phillips. Four of those movies are probably going to be nominated for Best Oscar this year. I mean, there is just so much out there right now. And, you know, we're always saying go to the movies. But I feel like especially right now, this weekend, I mean, if you can't find something to watch that entertains you, then you got no business – going to see movies.
You transitioned into Mickey from the Rocky films.
I do.
So if Bad Grandpa wins the box office, then we should just unplug the podcast and give up.
We'll just unplug and give up. But no, it's fun. That's funny too. It's a funny movie. People are liking that too. So I mean, yeah, Bad Grandpa's out there too. If that's what you're looking for, Sean O'Connell,
yes sir,
is my guest every week. Thank you very much for joining us on the FanCast Movies Podcast. It's a podcast on Fandango.com or on Movies.com. Sean and I are on Twitter, and this podcast is on iTunes too, where you can go subscribe and review it and say nice things about us. Why not?
Please. And prepare for next week when we are going to geek out.
I'm dressing up. I'm going to dress up as Thor.
Okay.
I want you to dress. I want to dress up, and we're going to do it in character, the whole podcast, which will be fun. And Sean will be shape-shifting into different characters as we go along. But yeah, Thor is next week, and I can't wait to talk to you about that one. I can't wait to see what you think about it. And so it's going to be a really fun conversation. Anyway, everyone, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I really appreciate it, and so does Sean. Sean.
Yes, sir.
Have a good weekend, man.
Enjoy your weekend at the movies.